Major Crane calling.
There's more than 200 companies that are doing drones today. When we were getting certification in 2022, we were six. Ukraine today represents the non-stop field where the speed of innovation or the cycle from version 1 to version 2, version 3 is today not years, but days and months. And the weeks, we shouldn't underestimate the enemy. The electronic industry is weak in Russia, but it exists. How they are getting access to some of the latest, and can they get access to the latest innovation in chips? We need to drive both innovation, speed, technology integration. A lot of tools that emerged available today for innovation in the military tech should be implemented in the military tech.
Hello, everybody. This is Brian Bonner, host of Ukraine Calling, and today's program is going to be a winner. We are in the midst of a high-stakes technological arms race, and whoever wins is likely going to win this war that Russia has inflicted on Ukraine. So there's nobody better to go to, because for the last more than a decade, wherever there's innovation in Ukraine, Dmytro Shimkiv is either at the center or very close to the center. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Brian. Very happy to be here.
So there's a lot to talk about, and it's an ever-changing field. So much so, I looked on Amazon to see if I could get some recent books on drones, but things are changing so quickly that books aren't written yet.
Well, there is a very good book. It's called The Drones War, and it's probably the most fascinated book about drone history.
Is it current?
It's the drones war. It's going back in the history, because the drones been around for many, many years. Mm-hmm. So it started in, actually the first drones were developed by DARPA for the war in Vietnam, and the first two drones were tested there. And then there was a big development in Israel. And then there was a serious set of events and transition that happened in the United States with the new technology evolving and being used, but in a slightly different perspective. And then there was a development in Iran, in Turkey, and globally.
So that's
It's all in this book. It's a great book, actually.
Do you remember who wrote it?
I need to look up.
But it's a new book. It's relatively new.
Well, I've listened to it through Audible a year ago.
I'll look for it. Drones War, yeah. Because I know a lot of people are interested in this subject, trying to stay on top of it. But I need to introduce you, because you have a great long history, and you're much younger than I am. You're not even 50 years old. But I guess I'll go at the beginning. Lviv Polytechnic National University, and I know you're still proud of it because you're on the supervisory board, as you are of Kyivstar as well. Former, managed a lot of IT companies, former head of Microsoft Ukraine, and then CEO of Darnitsa Pharmaceuticals, I believe. And of course, for more than 4 years, from 2014 to 2018, deputy head of administration in charge of reforms.
Presidential administration.
Of the presidential administration under Petro Poroshenko, and achieved a lot of reforms, not all that Ukrainians wanted, but significant. Got a lot of awards, but I'm going to highlight one, because in when I was the chief editor of the Kyiv Post in 2015, we named him one of the top reformers in Ukraine, justifiably so. And I think that was spurred on by we'd been running in the slow lane with internet on 2G for a long time. And it took Shimkiv's skill to get us into 3G, which seems like ages ago technologically.
And then immediately into 4G.
Immediately into 4G. And at the time we said, Shimkiv takes a different approach to public service than some of his predecessors. He's accessible, optimistic, and focused on moving Ukraine out of the Soviet era and into the modern one. He is also pushing for more transparency in government, including online access to public information. Greater transparency alone is a strong deterrent to corruption. Wow, we were nice.
Yeah, thank you.
But it was true. So I'm just going to set the table, because there are some, I really want to get your thoughts, because some people believe what's happening in drone warfare since the full-scale invasion is going to revolutionize military spending to the point where we don't need big Navy ships, because they're just sitting ducks for these sea baby drones, which are like speedboats with that. Others say, no, drones are, this is kind of their moment. It's going to be kind of a flash in the pan because they're not going to be dominant, because for every, as the military says, for every sword, there's a shield. For every advance, there's a counter advance. And then it'll just be a draw. How do you see what's happening out there?
I think we are in this stage where a lot of new technology being introduced, and we are facing a lot of new scenarios of the warfare. And when, particularly with the drones, we suddenly see the drones not only in the air, but also on the land and on the sea. And it's not a secret. Some of these technologies being around, and they've been used and developed, unfortunately not being paid a lot of attention from different commanders. The famous jokes is that the classical killers of the flying thing are pilots. The same thing with the ships. There was a very great story from Lockheed when they were developing a stealth ship, and the main reason why it was killed because there was no bridge. So there is a lot of technology and innovation that's emerging. What is important is that I still believe that the big ships, big planes, big technology will still be around. Why? Because they carry a different firepower. They carry a different suppression, different payloads. They create a certain deterrence and create a pressure on the enemy. At the same time, they will have to look for the defensibility. So because the new small, let's say if we're talking about Sea Baby or other type of sea drones, they will be around, and they're going to kind of accelerate. Their development will accelerate. At the same time, there will be a lot of questions about defense. So the evolution is not only technology and how they can be suppressed, but how you can walk around the technology, how you can bypass technology, how you stop the technology advancing to your ships, to your bases, to your troops. And that creates a non-stop spiral of innovation.
A lot of offense and a lot of defense. How do we assess the public, who is ahead and who is behind? Because, you know, when two teams are playing football, neither team has to be great. You just have to be better than the other team.
I think that we will be seeing the pace of innovation is continuing. So it's not Ukraine today represents the non-stop field where the speed of innovation or the cycle from version 1 to version 2, version 3 is today not years, but days and months and weeks. And that's the solution. The moment you implement solution, you immediately introduce new version, you get to the battlefield, you see working, non-working, you make immediately adjustments. So the cycle in Ukraine for a lot of innovation is in a higher pace than anything that happens elsewhere.
Including Russia.
Including Russia. Russia is also innovating. I think, which is important, we shouldn't underestimate the enemy. The enemy has a good engineering school. It's not a secret. It's always been there. Russia directing a lot of its resources to military production. Russia has good electronic engineering, and we see it with electronic warfare. Russia has access to space, and we already seen the deployment of satellites with a lot of with ambiguous question which been addressed by American president and intelligence agencies. What Russia intends to do with the space? Russia has fleets, etc. Yes, there is a lot of questions about sustainability in this. The electronic industry is weak in Russia, but it exists. And the question is that how they are getting access to some of the latest, and can they get access to the latest innovation in chips, in the AI capabilities? Would China continue to sell them this in the hidden ways? What's the engagement with Iranians and so on? So I think we need to be ready, and the world, the free world, need to be ready with the pace of innovation much higher, faster, as well as innovative, but also affordable. Because question about Russia can bring a lot of inexpensive stuff to the battlefield in the big volumes. And we need to take this into account, because the Second World War demonstrated to the world that a super professional equipment developed by Nazi Germany can be suppressed by the quantity of, T-34 is not sophisticated tank. But at the same time, the abundance of the production can create a suppression on the opposition. So that's why we need to drive both innovation, speed, technology integration, a lot of tools that emerged available today for innovation in the military tech should be implemented in the military tech.
Numerically, Russia is superior to us. I mean, three times the population. And unless we have our Western partners financially, they're superior. Is this an aspect that that Ukraine can win?
First, I think the fundamental principle for us in this discussion is the will of Ukrainian people and Ukrainian armed forces to fight back. So we're not going to surrender. We're going to fight back. We will, and today we are demonstrating the development and the progress and ability to stop Russian of advancing is because both of the will of Ukrainian soldiers on the battlefield, but at the same time, the enormous support that Ukraine is getting from our international partners. United States, Britain, Germany, and we just can go list of the countries, NATO countries, who are helping us with both technology, tools, weapons, and armor, and especially advanced armor that enabled us to stop with the precision strikes, with the precision targeting of enemy, to stop Russian advancements.
In the camp of West plus Ukraine versus Russia plus China plus North Korea, you think the...
Yeah, I think
our side can dominate.
And I also believe that none of the empires ever in the world, there is a history, all empires that tried to clank to their empire failed. Okay. And you can go through the 20th century after the Second World War and many, many famous cases. We look at the Britain, we look at the Netherlands, we look at the France, we look at many, many places who had extension of the empire, trying to clang to this empire concept, and all failed. And the free world...
Well, hopefully this war will put the final dagger into this dying Russian empire.
Absolutely. And that's what I solely believe. But we should be worried about the consolidation of their strong players, the axis of evil. We're talking about Russia, Iran, North Korea, and China. And China looking to me, I know that there is a lot of different political view, is in the enemy camp.
Yeah, it clearly is that way, which is a bit odd because they are really dependent on a robust global economy and export economy.
At the same time, they decided to engage in the way to support Russia. Yes. in this with the solution equipment. Smuggling the bits and pieces there to basically fight Ukraine.
Right. It looks like they want to help Russia more than they want a stable environment. I guess we go into digress, but it's interesting that you view drones, which is pretty much your life now, professional life, as just an important but integral part. Not going to replace tanks, soldiers.
In terms of Aerodrone, so I when the war started, I become a partner in Aerodrone. Aerodrone makes heavy lifting, big planes. We carry significant payload. We have two models. One carry 80 kilos payload, another 300 kilos payload. So heavy lifting drones carrying a significant payload, fully autonomous. That's the future. There will be a lot of tools. Autonomous vehicles on the land, autonomous vehicles in the air. But the question is that how you can bring the capability of the piloted platforms to unpiloted environment or uncrewed tools.
And that's one of your tasks.
And this is one of the things that's evolving.
And the payload is explosives, you're talking
about. Well, it can be anything.
Can be explosives.
It can be explosives, can be kinetic, it can be anything, can be rescue, can be ISR. There is abundance of the scenarios to be used. And we've been, over the last year, we explored so many scenarios of usage, which can be from the pure civil story, which happened when the company was founded. We've been classical agriculture drones and logistical drones. We've done the first direct flight between Kyiv and Kharkiv, fully autonomous, to deliver for Novopost. Mm-hmm. But the war changed the perspective. And this is a particularity of Ukraine, where the country, which is super engineering, we have so many IT companies, today rechanneling all their knowledge, hands, experience into this engineering task force, getting into the how we can build weapons that would stop the enemy, destroy the enemy, protect the country. And the amount of the innovation is happening is just amazing. And that's why coming back, and that's why you see things with the sea drones. And Ukraine proven that big ships, big Russian ships, can be kept in bay for a long, long time in the Black Sea.
Afraid to go out.
Would they be the solution, tools to attack sea drones? Yes. But the sea drones are not sitting, they're evolving. So there will be the escalation of attack and defense, maneuverability, different behavior. And then that leads to the tactics of usage, how they're used. The same with the drones. You have big drones, small drones. You have big distances. You have from my experience working with the military, is that significant portion of any success is knowledge and deep preparation of the missions. Technology is one piece, but the smartness, cleverness, shrewdness of the military who uses the tools is a paramount. That's why, even though I'm a strong believer in robotics and artificial intelligence, human brain is still human brain.
Before we dive into maybe some the where the technological race is now, what is AeroDrone's position in the market? I mean, I read there's dozens of similar companies, or is it not that way? Are you in a very specific niche?
We are in a very specific niche. We're primarily focusing on the heavy payload, long-range, high-endurance, meaning that we can carry a lot of stuff, and then we fly on the long distances. And that was from the very beginning of the concept, because you normally see a small drones like FPV drones, which has today their flying distance being extended to 15 kilometers or even more.
1,500 kilometers,
yeah.
Right.
And then gradually, then there is a reconnaissance drones that can fly significant distances, but they carry small payloads. They cannot carry more than an average 20 kilos, 15 kilos, etc. And now, and our niche is anything, well, like we anything heavy, it's us. Okay. Super heavy, it's us. Right. So, because that creates a possibility of delivering, if you're talking military, a lot of different capabilities for the military, because every powerful armor weighs a lot. So, or if you want to fly somewhere far, you need big tanks. They weigh, gasoline weighs. Yes. So you need tools that would enable you to fly long distances. And so
your main client, Ukrainian military?
Today, yes.
So from the budget, okay. That's interesting. And you probably know where the tech talent is. Are you getting enough?
This is difficult. I think that Ukraine has a lot of talent. A lot of talents are now serving in the Ukrainian armed forces, and I appreciate and thank you them for doing this. Some talents left the country due to their personal beliefs, needs, family needs, and so on. There's a lot of people in the country which are involved in Ukrainian in the development of different technologies. I mean, just giving you a number, there's more than 200 companies that are doing drones today. I mean, think about this. We had, when we were getting certification in 2022, we were six. And there was a kind of...
In 2022, six?
Yeah.
And now 200?
Yes.
Are they legitimate companies? Yeah,
yes, they're all legitimate companies. They're all supplying through the government. They're certified by Ukrainian Ministry of Defense to be officially that products can be used, procured, and utilized.
So is this competition a good thing?
Yes. No, first is competition, but it's also an innovation. So think about how many companies are involved, and each company has at least 15, 20 people. At minimum, at average, some companies are big. Like if you look at the Devira or you look at Ukrspets, there is more than 200 people in these companies. Or you look
is at the Aerodrone, one of the larger?
No, we're a small one actually because of the niche.
Yeah.
But there are companies that are big, and there are companies which were doing
different things.
There is a small cohort of how we call that the ancient of who kicked off in 2014. When the war started, not the full-fledged invasion, but the war started. And in 2014, a couple of companies being established.
Right.
And these companies started, they were pioneers in the drone business. They were developing first drones for Ukrainian armed forces and so on. And this is very prominent companies, but there were a few of them. I think three or four. And then there was six more added. So there was approximately, but in 2022, there was in reality just 10 companies. And okay. Now 200.
You mentioned one of the challenges, and that's tech talent, is another budgetary. And by that, I mean, Max Boot of the Washington Post wrote basically that militaries are very, very conservative and hard to change, especially if they're not at war. Because they authorize money for a battleship and it takes 7 years to build it and billions of dollars. We don't have that time. Do you see evidence that that Ukraine is able to be nimble in budgeting also?
Well, Ukrainian budget has limitations. We're living as you very well aware, that we live in significantly from this funding and financial support that we're receiving from our international partners. And there is a tons of needs that the Ukrainian budget need to spend money on. Then there is a different priorities within the armed forces. So there is a big need by Ukrainian armed forces, and there was still an issue of the funding that's available to all these 200 companies.
Never enough.
Never enough. What I've been observing and in the free Western world, I've been attending several conferences and events and exhibitions and talked to several ministers. What I observed, starting probably since the beginning of 2023, the big shift in allocating funds and budgets in the NATO countries to the military corps. So the budgets are double, triple, in sizes. Military complex ramping up productions, new funding for R&D being established, new additional allocation. So the machine, the free world machine, is ramping up to the machine of excess of evil.
Fast enough.
Yeah.
Could be faster.
Could be fast.
Okay, let me.
But it's already it's a good dynamics. It is
moving.
It's no
the train is moving.
Yes. I think that until the mid of 2023, everybody was like, "Well, there should be a way to contain the conflict to war." You know, Russia needs to surrender, but let's find a try. There was a lot of talks of peacing or something. Now I haven't met any single military on the international arena who would be pacifying the whole situation.
Unfortunately. And then we have all these other conflicts breaking out, the Middle East and Korea,
and you would always see Taiwan. Somebody from the axis of evil.
There. Yes,
there.
That's right.
Here and there, and they're kicking it off, trying to provoke the free world. Because I think what we're observing is a direct aggression against free will.
I think we've resolved, unfortunately, because, that we're going to have to spend trillions more on military for as long as we can see. I know it's not all a bad thing, because the innovations that come out of that can be applied to
absolutely
commercial life.
I mean, there's a life. If you look at the classical history of military technology, majority of the things that we have today, from mobile phones, internet, our ability to predict weather, our ability to predict earthquakes, our ability to do computing, a significant amount of computing power and so on, was driven by military technology.
I wonder why that is, because probably the life and death nature of this competition, right? If you lose, you're dead. Sure. If you win, you live.
And I think that, but at the same time, I must say, looking at this pace of growing the amount of weapons, the world could have worked on their healthcare issues, space research, scientific research.
We could have the best schools. We could have the best environment. We could have repaved every road in Ukraine and.
Yeah, but I'm also looking in the global perspective.
Yes.
It's like we could have the humankind could move into different capabilities. At the same time now, majority of my colleagues, me myself, spend a lot of time how to build a smarter weapon
to kill somebody. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Listen, break it down simply, because I know you can. I'm just a layman, and if I can understand it, then hopefully it can be understood. But I read that because Russia had superior electronic warfare capabilities, we get shot down 10,000 drones a month or disabled. I don't know if that's still happening. I heard the counter to that is AI-powered aviation drones that are off GPS, that are visual, that don't have a human operator. What's the situation there?
Well,
on that aspect.
Yeah, let's okay. So electronic warfare, contemporary equipment, being designed to use a navigation, our cars, our phones, we rely on the GPS signal or global navigational signals, because there is different systems in the world. There is European, Russians, Chinese, American, and so on. This technology has been used for navigational purposes. But this is, if you look at your device, which is always its drone or your car, or anything, we're using a signal from the space that we're receiving on the ground. If you can create a distortion to that signal or eliminate the reception of that signal, because you can imagine, we know all the frequencies are known. If you broadcast or create a lot of noise on that channel, your sensor on your phone or your device or anything on the drone will not be able to receive it. So you will say, I don't know, like when you get into elevator, your phone cannot relocate where you are. The signals are not coming through. So this is similar way what Russia is doing. Russia is deploying a directed solution with a lot of emission of noise on the big territory that suppresses the signal from the satellites. As a result, the signal is not coming to the drones. Drones cannot.
They fall.
They fall. There are some drones would fall. Some drones will continue flying, etc. In order to address that,
right?
There is so-called anti-jamming solution. So the solution that would deselect noise, very similar how we are receiving a signal from the Hubble, this telescope. The signal, the images that we're receiving are also going through a very noisy channel in the space. A lot of distortion, but we deployed a lot of technology that can deselect the useful information from the garbage suppressing it. So this similar technology, a similar approach, are used on the drones. So this is called, we can talk about CRPA antennas, we can tell anti-jamming solution, etc. Not to go into technical terms. Basically, the whole idea of it is how to select a good signal from a lot of noise. That's the whole thing. That's the whole game.
Are we making progress?
Yeah, well, it's constantly evolving.
So I had read that now drone manufacturers are required to show that they can
overcome Russian jamming. It's a mandatory. It's a mandatory testing from the very beginning. Your equipment need to be able to sustain certain jamming environment. So this is a jamming of navigation. Uh-huh. And the solution to this, either using anti-jamming solution or using alternative solution like optical navigation, where you're using computer vision to detect where you're located.
Okay.
So this is one part of the electronic warfare. Another part, you need to talk to your drone. It can be autonomous, behave in itself, but very
by
often...
By autonomous, you mean no GPS, no human...
No human connected. Autonomous, no human connected to the drone.
Okay.
You know, drone perform an operation or activity based on how it was programmed or what kind of mission is loaded. Fully autonomous, like no pilot, we used to be kids, was remote control. No remote control.
And no GPS.
GPS is there, of course.
Okay. It has to be there.
It has to be. It needs to navigate.
But can
it be non-navigating? Yes, it can.
It can navigate without GPS.
Yes, it can navigate. That's now we're going into technical.
The AI swarm drone future. Is it here already?
AI swarm drones, I think it's so swarm drones are there. So there are technology which is already been developed. There is a great research done by actually Chinese group of students who publish all their research. My favorite is that they build a group of drones that are flying through bamboo forests. Just imagine bamboo forests, and there is 6 or 7 drones going at full speed through the forest. That's as a swarm, because swarm there's one person controlling multiple drones instead of one person controlling one drone. Yeah. So that's talking about swarm. AI actually available in majority of the drones, because one of the technology which has enabled us to select signal from the noise is AI, software-defined radio, and algorithm there enabled to learn how the noise is created, and noise has a pattern.
Right.
How you can remove the noise.
Okay.
This is option one. Then the AI in computer vision or navigation with a computer vision or targeting with optical tools. This is also optical. I mean, image recognition.
A bypass.
It's AI capability. Then there is an AI which enables process data on board of the drone. And then the next level, which is, I still think we're not yet there, globally, it's where drones can cooperate in the space as a human beings and make decisions on board. The plane, the drone, that's my ultimate vision.
Humans are not involved in the decision.
Yes, it's robots make decisions
on
the circumstances that surrounds them using sensors, using and situational awareness. And they have an ability to learn on the environment and decide what the next step will be doing. Today, very often, it's a pilot or operator who guides, controls, and kind of give orders. Let's put it this way: give orders to the drone to do certain actions.
And if you have the edge in robotics, you can take out targets better than your
enemy
and save lives.
You can aim better. You can have a more precision strikes, meaning destroying the enemy
or the target.
Oh, absolutely. And as a result, you get you actually gain in superiority, suppression, superiority on the battlefield, superiority in the period of time. That's what important in the war. So that other troops or can advance or maneuver, or you basically need the whole idea of the war is to force the enemy to surrender or withdraw.
Okay. Got it. Now, going to the sea, which Ukraine has been very successful at. But you talked about this earlier. Eventually, ships are going to have detection systems that are going to maybe neutralize these sea drones.
Sure.
Or stronger so that they're not.
So first, drones were not that fast.
Right.
Now the speed has been increasing. Then maneuverability on the sea is not an easy thing. We have waves, different weather conditions, etc. That's all impacting the behavior. of the engineering of the vehicles. But if the ships that's been constructed, they were not expecting anything being able to approach a ship.
Caught him by surprise.
But then there's a tools that detects things in the sea. That's the enemy, or as if we're talking about U.S. Navy, has been implementing. So it's a constant evolution. You couldn't say like, here's we are, and that's it. Well, here's we are. So their drones being able to put Russia fleet in bay and destroy a lot of their ships. Russia is already developing an approach or tactics of usage, how to attack, how to counterattack this. But Ukrainian developers are not sleeping either. So they see, they're understanding their tactics. So how you develop a tactics or solution that can counter this and create still this. And it's going to be due the evolution where the whole idea is that in the military, is that how you increase the cost of the enemy losses with the last cost on our side. The same thing, if enemy has to spend a lot of money to deter or detect the approaching vehicles or solutions, we need to do to take this also into account. So this is a big equations that's going on in terms of military technology innovation.
And we're not going to know until the end who won.
I think that it's never ending.
It's never ending.
It's both ability to innovate, and second is ability to produce and ship and deliver with the necessary costs. For this, so the ability of the financial system to support the innovation and industry to actually produce in the volume,
the talent,
you can produce a super one sophisticated tool, which can in production of well, this one tool takes, 5 years. Well, right.
We don't have five years.
We have to. That's fast. Why FPV drones become so successful. Easy to maintain. Easy to operate. Create a new destruction. On the battlefield.
And cost it.
Yes, exactly. But FPV drones, in a very simple version, like when you Mavic being attached, different bombing capability, were used in Iraq War. A lot of U.S. Marines are writing this in their memoirs about what ISIS has been using against U.S. Armed forces in Iraq. But today, in the war in Ukraine, this all becomes scaled and the drones become faster. So FPV is very fast drones. You need to be very skilled pilot to be able to operate it. And that requires a different training, etc. But they can carry now a payload. There is a lot of possibility to control them on the longer distance with a lot of technology implemented. That creates a possibility of increasing the gray zone. Because the further FPV are flying, the bigger gray zone between two armies.
And that's good?
No, it's moving. The more we push the enemy further from us, so that creates distance. And ideally, if we can reach the distance that artillery cannot reach, that's fantastic.
We're safe.
Yeah,
it's
basically, yes, we have constantly to maintain this distance with the different tools, but the idea is like this.
Well, there's so much more to talk about, but this is an area where Ukraine has shined internationally, and I think that I hope it has many more successes. I'm sure Aerodrone with you there will have its share of successes. Dmytro Shimkiv, I really appreciate you being here.
Brian, thank you very much for having me, and it's always a brilliant opportunity to speak with you, and I appreciate you having me here.
I always learn. I feel like I'm in university for free tuition. That's it for today. I'm Brian Bonner, your host at Ukraine Calling. You can watch us on YouTube. You can watch us on the website or wherever you get your podcast. Join us again next week, and we will have another great episode.